I'd like to again welcome everyone to today's internet seminar on becoming a NELAP accredited or recognized accreditation body, which has been sponsored by the U.S. EPA's Technology Innovation Program. My name is Jean Belt, and I also work with the Technology Innovation Program here at EPA, and I will be serving as the moderator for today's event. We'll get started in just a minute or two, and while we're waiting for the last few remaining participants to sign on and join us, I'll cover a couple of basic housekeeping items. When you registered for today's event, you did so from the seminar homepage or specific URL that's unique for this event. On the seminar homepage, you were able to see a detailed description of the event, as well as links to download the slides and additional materials that you will need to have with you as we go through today's training. So be sure to refer back to that seminar homepage and look at the links to additional resources so you can download the Word documents and other materials that you'll need in addition to the slides that will be covered during today's event. On the seminar homepage, you can find the contact information for today's instructors, as well as myself. And again, you'll find a link to additional resources, and you'll also find a seminar feedback form, which will be prompted to complete at the end of the event. At any point in time, you can feel free to reach out and contact myself or the instructors after the event is over if you have follow-up questions. Those of you who are joining us on the phone lines, we ask that you put your phone lines on mute for the seminar. If you don't have a mute button, simply press *6 to mute your line, and when you're ready to ask a question or need to vocalize something, you can hit #6 to unmute your phone. We ask that you do that because it'll help minimize disruptions for the instructors who will be talking via phones, and it makes an overall better experience for everyone. Again, do not put this phone call on hold. A lot of organizations sometimes have advertisements or background music that will be further disrupted to the call. So just keep your phones on mute today, and if you have questions, feel free to take your phones off of mute and speak up. Those of you who are joining us online are listening to us via your computer speakers, and hopefully everyone is looking at the first slide of today's presentation. You would have clicked on that seminar homepage or downloaded the materials and clicked the button that said Go to Seminar. So starting on slide number one, we're going to get ready to get going. But for those of you who are listening to the materials online, when you're looking at your slides online, you should see a series of orange buttons that line up on top of the slides. If you need to submit a question, you may do so at any time by clicking on the orange button with a large question mark. Another window will pop up and you can type your question up. And I'll see those questions as they're coming in real time, and I'll speak up for you and read them to the instructor on your behalf. Those of you who are listening on the phone lines can feel free to take your phone off and mute and ask questions at any point in time when they come up. We simply ask that you make sure you identify yourself and speak clearly so that everyone can hear you with your question. Those of you also streaming or listening to the audio or viewing the slides online, you can move through the slides simply by using the single arrow pointing to the right to move forward one slide, the single arrow pointing back to the left will bring you back one slide, and also use the numbered links that show up on the left side. Our instructors will be announcing the slide that they're moving to, so be sure to pay attention. If you do have a question you get lost, feel free to speak up, and I'll make sure that the instructors let you know where we are in the materials. If you have any technical difficulties with the audio stream or any of the slides, you can also use that question mark icon online to submit a comment, and our technical support staff will contact you. Please be sure to give us a phone number where you can be reached so we can try to troubleshoot the problem. And with that, I think we are roughly ready to get started. One last reminder, when the seminar is over today, you'll be pointed to one last slide, which will prompt you again to look at the additional resources, as well as fill out an online seminar feedback. This event is being recorded and will be made available for replay at a later date. So if you do know of colleagues that you think would benefit from the training, you'll be able to refer them back to the same seminar URL that you used to register, and they'll be able to watch the archived recording in about 1 to 2 weeks. So with that, I think we're going to kick things off. Today's first speaker is Daniel Hickman, who's the manager of the Technical Services Section of the Oregon DEQ Laboratory and Environmental Assessment Division. After that, we're then going to be joined by Kenneth Jackson, who is a research scientist and director of the New York State Environmental Laboratory Approval Program, or ELAP. I'm going to, again, ask one last time, those of you on the phone lines, hit your mute button or press *6 to mute your lines. Do not keep us on hold. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Dan.
Well, thanks, Jean. Welcome, everybody. I'm glad that people are here and are at least interested in becoming an AB. I can speak for the NELAP board and tell you that it certainly is not intended to be a closed group. We want as many of you people joining us that we can have. The more people involved, I think, the stronger the program. And so with that, I'm going to go to slide two. We're going to talk a little bit about the overview. This is complicated. I've got paper and electronics. Okay. What I want to do is give you a little information about the NELAB board, what we do, what the requirements are. Then we're going to talk about the accreditation body application. Sorry about email. Accreditation body application, what the evaluation team is, what the on-site evaluation of your program looks like. It's really a management review. There's an observation of a laboratory assessment. In your case, this is delayed, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Then I'll describe all the reports and required responses, how the final recommendation goes, and then there's at the end is a vote by the NELAB board. So on to slide number 3, So the NELAB board mission statement, and this is really important to keep in mind. Our mission is to implement a national program for the uniform and consistent accreditation of environmental laboratories. We spend a lot of time working on that and trying to do uniform assessment of laboratories. It's maybe it's not any harder than you would think. It was harder than I thought. So we do spend quite a bit of time working on that. And the other thing to notice about the NELAB board is that if those of you that have been involved in Chapter 6 of the NELAC 2003 standards that are currently in place, talks about duties of the NELAC director. That went away when we made that division and formed TNI. So those duties now have really been taken over by the NELAB board. We still try and follow Chapter 6 as closely as possible. But when you read that and you look where it says NELAC director, almost always it means the NELAB board or designee. On to slide number 4. So the purpose of the NELAB board is, again, to establish and implement a program for accreditation of the environmental laboratories. We work with the other programs in TNI. We're focused on recognition of accreditation bodies. So that's what you guys are now applying to be as accreditation bodies, or you may apply to be an accreditation body. And so we had to put together a way to do that. We adopt the acceptance limits for proficiency testing. Those are developed under the PT program. And we adopt a laboratory accreditation system developed by the laboratory accreditation system program. If you remember from your longer participation, we used to take input from outside sources, but all of the standards, all of the policies were written just by government organizations, really. Now we have a balanced group in the lab accreditation system, and they're the ones that will be writing the policies for us to follow. We still, as a group, vote on them for implementation, but we get a much wider, more consistent input, I think, from all the stakeholders and from a balanced consensus group. And again, as Gene said, please feel free to interrupt and ask me if you questions. I'll be happy to try and answer them as we go along. My presentation does not take a whole hour. I was expecting questions along here somewhere, so please feel free. Slide number 5. So let's talk about the NELAB board a little bit. Our membership is accreditation bodies, and we have one representative who's the primary representative, and we have one alternate from each of the NELAB recognized accreditation bodies. Each representative and alternate is officially appointed by the AB to represent their state program. So this isn't, you know, somebody different every week. We really expect consistent participation. The chairperson is an elected position selected by the members of the board. I currently hold that position, but we have more people who should be exposed to this maybe in the near future. We have something new under TNI that I think has been extremely important, and that's the position of program administrator. Currently for the NELAB board, that's Carol Batterton. She's the one with the sharp stick that pokes me to make sure I meet the timelines, keeps the NELAB board organized, helps set up our meetings, takes our minutes. Extremely valuable position. it's working with volunteers as we do, it's really hard to get a lot of that kind of work done, and Carol's been just great for us. And our meeting schedule at this point, we meet on the first and third Monday at 1:30 Eastern. I suppose that's open for change at some point, but that's what we've agreed to. Slide number 6. So what happens when you join the NELAP board? You know, we're self-governing. What you have to do is you have to agree that you'll grant accreditation to any laboratory that has NELAP primary accreditation from another NELAP recognized accreditation body. Now, the laboratory has to apply to you for a secondary accreditation, and you are required with this agreement to grant all the fields of accreditation they have in their primary certificate that they applied to you for, that are also included in your AB's recognition of fields of testing. The other requirement is you can't ask for other additional work, documentation, require laboratories to meet some other standards, especially for your state, for NELAC accreditation. There are other programs outside of NELAC that I suppose you could ask for, but not to receive a secondary accreditation under NELAP. And the other thing you agree to do, I hesitated putting some of these things on here because I'm not sure if that would scare some people away, but you do have to provide one person to go out on an accreditation body evaluation. As you'll see as we go through here, one of the team members is another AB state accreditation body person. Slide number 7. Just to give you a kind of a quick idea of what our topics are that we cover in our biweekly meetings, we spent quite a bit of time on consistency of assessment, as I alluded to earlier. That's really our focus. We're trying to meet the standards, and we're trying to do it the same across states. Very difficult to do, but that's our goal. We bring up implementation issues, things that we've had trouble with, things we're looking for solutions. Those get discussed. We worked quite a bit this year as we made this transition on our evaluation process and the SOP to guide evaluations. That was based on the original work done by the EPA regional evaluators. I think it's worked very good so far. We've gone through I think 9 evaluations, renewal evaluations, and we're finishing up the process on all of those. And I've heard all good things about the process. It seems to work very well. We also vote on recommendation for recognition, either new or renewing. And we're now starting to spend more time talking about self-sufficiency and fees and fee generation and how much it's going to cost and how it's going to get paid. Number 8. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about the process. I apologize if this sounds like it was written for third graders, but it wasn't. I just want to make sure I cover all the points here. I've tried not to leave anything out, but you know, again, please don't be offended if I state a lot of the obvious things. It turns out a lot of the obvious things aren't entirely obvious. So what do you have to do? What do you have to do to be an AB? Well, you have to submit an application package. It goes through a completeness review, and then when it's determined to be complete, it goes through a technical review. Then your program has an on-site evaluation. It's really a management review. It's based on 17011. Following that would be the report and the recommendation from the evaluation team. So I mentioned the lab assessment observation. For renewal ABs, that's normally scheduled at or near the time of the on-site evaluation. But in your case, since you're not doing actual NELAP lab accreditations, the NELAP board has decided to delay that about a year. And so 1 year into your accreditation recognition, they would have to schedule an observation of some of your assessors performing a lab assessment to see that you're actually complying with your SOPs and the standards. There'll be a final report after the back and forth, if corrective action is necessary. And then the evaluation team makes a recommendation to the NELAB board. Number nine. So here we go. Here is the actual procedure. Now, I'm going to tell you ahead of time, there's a couple of these things that aren't on the web yet, but they will be in a few days. What I'm going to tell you need to do to fill out your application, you need to download the following documents. I think you'll find them extremely helpful. You probably downloaded most of them now, but you have to have the application. And here's something new that is not on there yet, is the TNI Fields of Recognition spreadsheet. I'm going to show you that so you understand what that is. The recognition flowchart, that's quite helpful. The SOP for evaluation of accreditation bodies, this isn't something that you have to do, but I think it's extremely helpful for you to know what's going to happen. It really gives you a good idea of the process. There's also the TNI application completeness checklist that you'll want to go through and make sure that you've actually answered all of this, because that's what our evaluation coordinator is going to look at to see if your application packet is complete. And then the big one is the TNI checklist to determine accreditation body compliance, because you're going to complete that one and send it in. Okay, number 10. So here we go, in excruciating detail. Fill out the application. Now, some of this is obvious, or maybe it's not, but you want to check the appropriate application type. When we first started this, we realized there wasn't a box for new applications. I believe that's been fixed. We need you to enter the accreditation body name that you want displayed. That's your legal name that you want displayed on certificate. This is where the name's going to come from at the end. We need the mailing address. We need your phone fax or your general email if there's something. You also have to identify the accreditation body program manager, provide contact information, because there's the person that we're going to be talking to quite a bit. You also have to have a quality assurance officer, and we ask you to provide the name and contact information. Sorry about that. We have a PA system here. And then there's an area where you list your accreditation body staff, provide their area of responsibility, their education experience, and their most recent NELAB training to check for requirements that they meet the training standards. Slide number 11. Also in the application then, you want to provide names and contact information for contractors if you use third-party contractors for lab assessment. If you don't use them, just indicate that you don't have a need to use contractors at this point. The next thing in the application is a list of laboratories, but that's only used for renewal applications. You don't have any yet. Skip the page. Actually, it's probably a couple pages. You need to identify all individuals authorized to sign your accreditation certificate. That could be one. That could be many. It doesn't really matter. You need to list your normal business hours. We have to know when the evaluation team can show up. And this one is interesting. Whoever is the person that's responsible for your lab accreditation program needs to sign the document. We had a lot of discussion about this. It used to say, and I'm not going to get the words exactly right, but the highest ranking official in the organization that has responsibility, which in most states is like the governor usually, that's not what we meant in the standard. We want the person who's actually responsible for the program to sign the document. And that's a very important piece. We're asking for everything electronically, but we need this signature sent in on hard copy. And then you need to attach the spreadsheet that denotes the requested areas of recognition. And it's a technology matrix, if you will. And that's, I believe, on the next slide. I just took a piece of one. Yeah. So I took a piece of one. This is not all the technologies that can be offered. This is just what would fit on the slide. And the way you fill out this spreadsheet is you look at the technology on the left and then fill in what matrix you plan to accredit labs for with X's in the boxes. So as you can see here, you can pick, well, I don't care. Toxicity testing, you'll notice we've selected non-potable solids and chemical here. This spreadsheet is not yet available on the web, although I plan to get one shipped there. The new site just went up yesterday that says how to become an accreditation body, I believe. And so this is where all these documents will show up over the next day or two. Any questions so far? Apparently put everyone to sleep.
Okay. Dan, what, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are the, you mentioned earlier, the training requirements. What are the training requirements the people have to meet prior to their organization becoming an AB?
Well, they have to have the basic assessor training. Oh man, you're going to make me do this without looking at the standards for a beginning.
Dan, I can maybe get you off the hook. This is Ken Jackson.
You're going to talk about that, aren't you, Ken?
I will be talking about that.
Good. Yeah. Then I'll let it go right now, Bill. But and Ken will pick it up in the next thing.
And if I don't, Bill, interrupt again, okay?
Okay, but thanks for the question, Bill. I'm glad to know somebody's actually still here. Slide number 13. Here's stuff you have to send with your application. You have to send in copies of statutes and regulations that establish and govern your program. You also have to send us copies of all the policies or guidance documents or SOPs you have governing the operation of the accreditation body's program. So this is your on-site SOP, all of the things about the management of the program, how you respond to complaints and whatnot. You need to provide documentation on how you're going to restrict the use of accreditation by laboratories. You know, they can't falsely advertise. There's a variety of things in Chapter 6 that labs are not allowed to do with your logo. They can't use it in misleading advertisement. You have to have some documentation that shows us you're going to be looking at that. You have to send in a copy of the Quality Systems Manual, again, for your program, and procedures for selecting training or contracting and appointing assessors. And then you have to have a description of your conflict of interest disclosure program. Now, these are things that are not in the application, but are required to be sent with it. Slide number 14. AB application continued. You need to complete the checklist to determine accreditation body compliance. Answer all 326 questions on 27 pages. And you need to check yes, no, or NA. Here's a couple hints. There shouldn't be many NAs, and every no is going to be identified as a deficiency during the technical review. So my recommendation is you find a way to answer them yes and provide documentation for all those questions. Ken's going to talk about this in more detail, however. Every time you answer yes, there is a place for you to indicate the document that supports your answer. And what we ask here is that you not only tell us it's, who knows, there could be a document number, there could be a title, it could be SOP for on-site assessment. What we want to know is what page, what chapter, some detail so the evaluation team can go right there, look at it, and go, yeah, you're right, it is there. Otherwise, the evaluation process is much more complicated than anybody wants it to be. And keep in mind, one of you is going to have to do this, so, you know, turnabout's fair play. And then you send that whole completed checklist as part of the application package. Next slide. The web is wrong. I just went there today, and it says you're supposed to send it to me. Don't send it to me. This is where the application needs to go, and it needs to be in electronic form, except for the hard copy of the signature page for the application. It goes to Jerry Parr. That's the address there in Texas. He will then send back a letter acknowledging he's received the application. That packet gets forwarded to our evaluation coordinator, who I'll describe in a minute. And if you have any questions about the process, please send them to Carol Batterton. She's our program administrator, and I've listed her email here. So it might be of some value for you guys to keep some of these slides for future reference. At least this information is correct, and we'll have the web updated as soon as possible. Carol will then either answer your question or get you to the right person who she knows can answer the question. All right, let's move on. Number 16, I'm going to talk about this new thing we have. We have an evaluation coordinator. Now, when we originally wrote this in the evaluation SOP, we envisioned this as being one person. That's not how it's played out so far in the first 9 evaluations, or actually the first 13 evaluations. We have 4 more that are in process right now. We've split that over. Carol has taken some of the administrative duties, and Lynn Bradley of EPA has taken on some of the other completeness checklist duties, and we'll talk a little bit about some of those here. So those two people assist the evaluation team by assuring that the communications between the evaluation team and the accreditation body and between the evaluation team and the NELAP board happens in a timely manner. They both have sharp sticks, and they poke us routinely to make sure things are moving along. They track and document that all the evaluations are performed according to our time limits, you know, as much as possible, and that they are done in conformance with our SOP for evaluation. Now, Lynn has been doing the review of the application for completeness, and she notifies the LE, and they usually concur, or I don't think I've heard that where they've not concurred that it was complete. And it's done according to the evaluation SOP and the NELAC standards. Slide number 17. I'm going to talk a little bit about the evaluation team. One member from an EPA region in which the AB is located. This is very similar to what it's been in the past. EPA has committed to us to finish these current renewals, and it at this point sounds like they will continue for at least the short term, but we are working on more of a long-term agreement with EPA. I think everyone's kind of waiting to see where the election goes and what the money looks like. But I have not heard anything to help allay your fears that EPA is interested in getting completely out of this and not being involved. So far, the regions that we've dealt with have been very interested in continuing, and they've really done a good job. As I mentioned before, one of the other people is the state accreditation body representative, so it's probably one of you people. We have a new position, the quality assurance officer. We had this sort of a position once before. Laura Autry went around with all of the teams during the last renewal cycle to see that everything was done consistently, and we really thought that was an important and very good idea. So we actually pay a quality assurance officer. Currently, it's Paul Ellingson to accompany the teams on these evaluation. On these evaluation management reviews, and we'll talk a little bit about the duties as well. Now, all members work under the direction of a lead evaluator, which in the past has always been EPA. What the note that I wanted to make here is that's not always true. It could be EPA, or in some cases, it's the AB representative. We've certainly had that in a number of cases. I know Bill Hall is scheduled to be the lead. Ken was the lead in one. I think Aurora did one. Paul Bergeron did one. So there's a number of cases where the state AB representative has taken the lead. I think that's progress, actually. So let's talk a bit about the evaluation team. This is not any different than it's been in the past. This is really comes out of the 2003 NELAC standards. All the team members have to meet minimum requirements for training and professional qualifications. The elite evaluator, and we would like all team members to successfully complete the NELAP accreditation body evaluator training course. We put that on in January in wherever we were in January. Where were we in January? Newport Beach, is that right? Anyway, we put it on in January. It's on the web. It's available for people to view. And there's talk about doing that again, but I don't have any details. All the members of the evaluation team need to sign the conflict of interest certification, and they have to comply with the policies of the board and the following criteria in 2003, which is 691D, that I included here in the next slide, so that you see what the actual qualifications are. They're not trivial for the team, and I really want you to understand that the people who come there better have some pretty good knowledge of the program. You know, it says that one member has to meet education experience and training for lab assessors specified in Chapter 3 on-site, and you have to have one other member with experience that includes either one of the following. So any one of these would count. Certification as a management systems lead assessor from international recognized auditor's certification body, or a year of experience implementing federal or state lab accreditation rulemaking, or a year of experience developing or participating at a managerial level in lab accreditation programs. They have to provide documentation that verifies freedom from conflict of interest, and all the experience in this section had to have been acquired within the five-year period immediately preceding appointment as an evaluation team member. So we're looking for someone with current experience. This wasn't easy to make sure we had teams that met this, but I believe they all did. Slide number 20. So let's talk a little bit about the lead evaluator's duties. So they're generally responsible for all the planning activities. They're responsible for team coordination, scheduling, all of the things that might happen, which include the on-site evaluation, and then eventually will be the lab assessment observation or shadow assessment. They're expected to provide direction to the evaluation team members throughout the whole process, make sure that they're following the guidelines, to make sure they're using the proper checklist. They're also, this is the big job, or could be a big job, they're responsible for getting consensus of the evaluation team to deliver a unified final recommendation of recognition status to the board. They also review and approve all the reports sent to the AB. Everything has to go through the LE. Number 21. So here I'm going to describe this new position we created, the Quality Assurance Officer. Really what their job is they don't participate, they're not a team member, they don't ask a lot of questions. Paul has been extremely good at just hanging out and watching. And his job is to assure that the evaluations are performed in a consistent manner and in conformance with our SOP for the evaluation of accreditation bodies. He looks at the technical review of the AB application, the on-site evaluation, which is the management review of the AB, looks at the review of the AB corrective action plans. And then he lets the NEDOT board know if there's any unresolved consistency problems as they occur. And he was very good at doing that. There were things that were different between evaluation teams that we hadn't thought about beforehand. And the NELAP board made some policy changes to identify the problem and then hopefully correct it. And then he's going to provide a report to the board at the completion of each evaluation. So to tell us how it went and what actually happened. Next slide. So what happens to your application? Now you got the players, you got the team, you understand how all that works. Slide 22 talks a little bit about the completeness review. This is your application packet completeness review. We're going to check to make sure that everything's there. So it goes to the evaluation coordinator, who has 20 days to complete their checklist for the application completeness. Again, that's on the web. You can see what that entails. They identify if there's anything missing, and then they send an application completeness deficiency report back to you guys, to the AB. You then have 20 days to submit any missing documentation, although you can request another 20-day extension. When that comes in, then the lead evaluator is notified of the complete application completeness status, so that it's either been sent back or it's waiting for documentation, or that it in fact is complete. Next slide happens after the application packet has been determined to be complete. It goes through a technical review. Now the entire evaluation team of 2, 3, or maybe 4 people completes a technical review of the application package, and they have to issue a report within 30 days. This is a compliance or deficiency report. If there's deficiencies, if we find that there's some of the documentation, perhaps it was listed, really doesn't meet the standard, which is usually the case. We disagree with maybe either it was the wrong documentation, or we really don't understand how it meets the standard. It goes back as a deficiency. Then the AB has 30 days, just like the labs, to submit a corrective action plan. Here's either make the changes or identify what the changes are. Evaluation team has another 30 days to review that if needed, and send a report back to the AB. If there are still deficiencies unresolved, the AB has 20 days. Now, this is what the standard says. I don't know why it's different, but you now have 20 days to address those remaining deficiencies. Then the evaluation team looks at the second corrective action plan and sends the report within 20 days of the receipt of that corrective action, if it were necessary. Slide number 24 is continuation of technical review. So if there weren't any deficiencies during the technical review, either the first or after corrective action plans, then the LE will schedule the on-site evaluation. What I will tell you is there have been times when it seems like either the deficiencies weren't of enough significance, or the evaluation team felt it was going to be easier to look at corrective actions on site. On-site evaluations were scheduled even with some technical review deficiencies not entirely resolved. And so that's the lead evaluator's option. If he thinks it's going to serve the program better to just go ahead and review those on-site, they can still schedule the on-site evaluation. However, if application deficiencies are still there after the second corrective action plan, evaluation team really doesn't have any option other than to recommend to the board that the application be denied. We really think everyone's going to be prepared. This hasn't happened, but what we don't want to do, just like your labs, we don't want corrective actions to go on and on and on and on. So you get two shots at it, and then we say, no, try harder next time, and maybe it'll be easier for you. Next slide, number 25. If you will. Let's talk a little bit about the on-site evaluation. So we have to, the way the standards are written at this point still, we're required to do an on-site management review. It really follows ISO 17011 initially and every 3 years. Once the evaluation team determines that all the documentation is satisfactory, the application is accepted, the on-site is scheduled, the on-site evaluation has to be conducted within 60 days. That's a tough timeline sometimes, after completion of the application technical review. And the completion of the review is when the lead evaluator determines that all deficiencies have been appropriately addressed. And then, of course, the on-site is scheduled, just like the labs, at the mutual convenience of both the team and the AB. So there'll be some, you know, the team has to get together and find out dates that are available, try and find dates that work with the AB. And they seem to have done a pretty good job doing that. That hasn't been a problem. Next slide is more discussion of the on-site evaluation, slide number 26. The lead evaluator then sends a written confirmation to the accreditation body of all logistics. And so they're going to send you a letter that includes the on-site evaluation date or dates, the agenda, the scheduled activities, copies of the standardized evaluation checklist, the names, titles, affiliations, and on-site responsibilities of the NELAP member, evaluation team members, so you'll get a chance to at least know who's going to be there and what they're going to do. And they will hopefully then include names and titles of your staff that need to be available for this management review. And, you know, they'll talk to assessors and they'll talk to management personnel. The next slide, number 26, is a continuation again of the evaluation process. They're going to conduct a fairly comprehensive evaluation of your program. They want to know that what you sent in your application package is accurate and that it does in fact conform to the NELAC standards. And they're going to do it by, as I said, they're going to interview the management and technical staff, your assessors. They're going to review documentation you have in hand and make sure that any corrective actions, if there were some, actually have been taken to address the deficiencies found in the technical review. And they'll also be involved in reviewing training records and talking to the staff designated as assessors to help evaluate their training and make sure that they, in fact, do understand their jobs, I guess, very well. Slide number 28, more on-site evaluation. So what happens after they've performed the management review? The evaluation team has 30 days then to get their report together from all the team members and send their findings of the on-site evaluation to the AB. Now, I put this note in here and I want you to understand that the AB evaluation isn't considered complete until both the on-site evaluation and lab assessment observation are complete. In the case of a new AB, what we've determined is that the certificate would still be granted, but it will be granted with the understanding that you will successfully undergo a lab assessment observation probably a year in the future after you receive your recognition. For renewal ABs, that's part of the renewal process, and it's done normally at the time of the on-site or near the time. You then have to respond to this report with your plan of corrective action if there are deficiencies within 30 days. The evaluation team gets that plan. All the team members review it, and they respond through the LE with a single report within 20 days. And then you get to respond to that report, if there's things for you to respond to, with another plan of corrective action in 30 days to do that. This is why that flowchart is kind of helpful. Slide number 29, we're almost done. So on-site evaluation, this is how it ends up. If you've addressed all the deficiencies, or if you didn't have any deficiencies, then the lead evaluator recommends to the board that the accreditation body be granted NELAP recognition. Those are brought to the board. We get the entire package. All of this stuff now is done electronically, so all the board members, being self-governing, get copies of all of the evaluation documentation, and we review the report and all that documentation, and then we vote on recognition status. The details of the vote are a little odd in that once we have that, we have to have a motion to call for a vote at the next meeting, so people know that they have to look at that documentation, study it, and then the vote happens the next meeting, and then according to our voting SOP, there's a two-week period where everyone has to get their votes in. If they weren't at the meeting, they can still vote by email. So that's how the process itself works. At the end of that, assuming that we follow the recommendation for acceptance, then the NELAP board issues the certificate of recognition, including fields of the recognition, and it's valid for 3 years. And I'll tell you, we don't know what date that's going to start on. This is our first attempt at having new ABs, and so we're trying now to determine if we need to spread these out. Currently, we have 9 due at the same time on July 1st and 4 due on July 1st the next year. we're now on the NELOT board discussing what the start date for this three-year period ought to be, and we've just begun discussions. But it's a three-year period. We're not sure how it'll actually run. Now, the accreditation body and or the evaluation team has the right to appeal the final decision. So if the AB doesn't agree with us or the evaluation team gives us a recommendation the NELOT board doesn't follow, you guys have rights to appeal the decision, and we'll bring it up in through our appeals process. We actually have an appeals process that we'll follow, and we get a number of people involved and look at all the information. And then if you look at the last slide, this is what you get for all your trouble. You get a certificate that identifies you as being recognized by the NELAP, TNI NELAP program, and with it also will be a copy of your recognized fields of testing, and those get posted on the web. Currently, if you go to the web and look under accreditation bodies, you will see some of those, almost all of them are there. And that's where yours will end up. Any questions? No questions? Do you have any, Gene?
No, we don't have anything that's been submitted online. This is just a reminder, if you are online streaming the audio, you can submit your questions by simply clicking on the orange question mark icon that appears above the slides. But at this point, we don't have anything that's coming online.
So can we tell if there's anybody still out there? I didn't put them all to sleep, did I?
No, you didn't. There were about 35 people total that joined us between the phone lines and the online. So you just may have done a very full and complete job of providing information to everyone.
Okay, well, I hope it's okay. If you have questions, you can ask them here. You can send me an email, and I'll be glad to try and answer them. And certainly you can also get a lot of information from Carol Batterton. And so I guess I'm done 10 minutes early. I expected a couple of questions. Perhaps Ken will
get all
questions.
Go ahead.
And that is about sending the application into Jerry Parr, and there's a P.O. box. What if you want to send it by something which can be tracked, like express mail or UPS? You need a location address for that.
Very good point, Irene. Perhaps I need to check in on how that's going to work.
This is Carol. Dan, I can get that for you if you give me just a minute.
Oh, thanks, Carol. I wasn't sure you were on the line.
Yeah, I'm here. Hold on just a second.
Yeah, I didn't actually think of that we had a P.O. box rather than an actual address. Anything else while we're waiting for Carol to dig through her file, sir? Trying to draw up some business.
Again, if you've muted your phone lines, you can unmute by pressing #6 at this point.
Okay. The ground address is 210 South Lamar, also Weatherford, in the same zip code, 76086.
Would you please repeat that?
Okay. 210 South Lamar, LAMAR, Weatherford, Texas, 76086.
And Carol, can we get that updated on the web? Can you take care of that? Right now it says send everything to me.
Oh, okay.
I just checked this morning, and
All right.
Get that, because we do want it sent with delivery confirmation so you know it made it there. Although it's not required that applications be sent with delivery confirmation, and don't forget, you will get a letter of confirmation back from Jerry when he gets it. Okay, well, I guess we can move on, Jean, unless you want to do something for a few minutes.
No, I think it would be perfectly fine to move along. It's better to have more time than not enough towards the end of one of these events. Judy from Oklahoma, you've asked about the telephone number. I did send you that email. So if you're streaming the audio online, please check your inbox. I did send you the call-in number. I'm not going to open that up to everybody right now because I don't want everyone dialing in on the phones. But if we're ready, we're going to kick things over to our next speaker, who is Kenneth Jackson from the New York State Department of Health. Ken, are you ready?
Yes, I am, and good afternoon, everybody. I just want to reiterate something that Jean said earlier and which Dan also said. I want to encourage you to ask your questions in real time. In other words, rather than wait for me to invite you. We got quite a lot to get through, and I think it'd be more efficient if we deal with questions as they come up. So if you're on the phone, please feel free to interrupt. If you're online, type frantically so that Jean can get your message to me before we move on too far. Before I start, Carol asked me to point out something to you that I don't think Dan mentioned this, but if he did, here it is again. On the NELAP webpage, we've got how to become an AB, and that just came up quite recently. You'll find that helpful. It also has two very good flowcharts that show the processes that are followed for the application and for the on-site evaluation. So it's on the NELAP webpage, and it's how to become an AB. Also, for my presentation, what you're going to do, if you go on to slide 32, right at the bottom, there are two things that you need. You need the application completeness checklist and the checklist to determine accreditation body compliance. You need those in front of you right now. If you don't have them, then I suggest you you download those right now. Okay, so what I'm going to be doing, there will be some overlap with what Dan did, and you may think that it looks pretty daunting. It's my job to show you that it's not quite that daunting. So I'll be repeating some of what Dan said, but I'll be going into more detail. I'll be referring to specific items on these checklists and showing you, I'll be highlighting some of them, the more important ones, the ones that you're more likely to get wrong, because some of us got them wrong, and lead you through that process. And hopefully at the end of it, you'll see that it's not quite such a daunting process after all. So I'm going to be talking about, this is on slide 32, the management and quality systems that you've got to have in place. You've got to have a lot of documentation, folks. That wasn't a question, right? No, okay. I'm going to be discussing what. This is very important. I'm not going to be telling you how to do it. I'm going to be telling you what you need to do. So if you've got questions on how to do it, please hold those, because we will be holding mentoring sessions. There's only one what, but there are many hows. There are lots of different ways you can do things, and we as accreditation bodies have, we've probably explored most of those ways. So we will be offering mentoring sessions. The first one will be at the Miami meeting in January, but there will be others. So even if you can't make the January meeting, don't worry about it, because I'll be saying more about this towards the end of my presentation. We will be offering plenty of mentoring on ways that you can do this. And as I said, I'm going to be referring to those two checklists, the application completeness checklist and the checklist to determine accreditation body compliance. If we go on to slide 33, let me first of all tell you what the essential requirements there are. Number one, you must have a statute, you must have enabling regulations. The application completeness checklist item 2 tells you that you've got to submit those copies. You've got to have statutory authority to grant, deny, suspend and revoke accreditation. You must have that statutory authority, because that's the only way recognition can work between accreditation bodies. You've got to have regulations to comply with the NELAC standards and enforce them. Now, having said that, we do recognize that regulations, especially changing regulations, can be a slow process in many states, and there is some latitude there for we're not going to throw anybody out because they couldn't get the regulations up to date in time. For instance, here in New York, it takes a couple of years to get regulations through. And thirdly, this is really important. Dan said this, and I'm going to say it again, and I'll even say it again later on, I think. Your regulations have got to authorize you to grant secondary accreditation based on the primary accreditation granted by any other NELAP accreditation body. We have a system of trust. You've got to trust the other accreditation bodies to do the job right, so that if they accredit a lab in their state and then that lab wants to work in your state, you can grant secondary accreditation. I said regulations must authorize. I don't know if that's strictly true. It's certainly highly desirable that you have that in regulation, but at least you have to show that you do it and that you have the authority to do it. Slide 34, the second essential requirement, you must have fully documented management and quality systems. Item 3 on that application completeness checklist says we need copies of all policies, guidance documents, instructions, SOPs, etc., etc., etc. You've got to have all those ready when you apply, and you've got to submit them. You've got to have a quality systems manual, and item 10 in fact goes on to detail everything that needs to, or the essential elements that must be in that quality systems manual. And I just want to highlight, or I have just highlighted a few of them, and I'm doing this because these are some of the things that we saw in the current round of reapplications, some of the things that most notably were missing with some states. You've got to have a policy statement. You've got to describe your document control procedure, and to show that it's working, it better be in that quality manual and all your SOPs. You better have document control. You need an organizational chart. The third bullet, you must have policies and procedures for maintaining well-documented and orderly lab files. That's number 15 on that list. Excuse the rustling of paper at this end if you can hear it, because I'm going through that list as well. It says the policies and procedures used by the AB for establishing and maintaining records on each accredited laboratory. The first time I went through this process, I didn't do that. And the team came along and they said to me, so where are your policies and procedures used for maintaining records on your accredited laboratories? I said, hey, turn around, look, see all those filing cabinets? They are those. But in fact, that wasn't good enough. I had to have a documented policy and procedure for maintaining those records. And I learned from that mistake. And you're fortunate you don't have to learn from your mistakes, because we're here to show you, talk about all the mistakes we made, and hopefully you can avoid those. The last bullet on slide 34, internal audit reports and corrective actions. You have to submit with your application your findings, reports and corrective actions from internal audits in the last 2 years. Now, this may or may not apply to you. Obviously, you don't already have an operating NELAP program, but in fact, if you have an operating program, if you're accrediting under the Safe Drinking Water Act, for instance, if you're accrediting drinking water laboratories or whatever, if you already have a state program, then, and Dan might want to jump in on this, I don't know if this was really decided, but I think we will probably be looking for those internal audits. Slide 35, personnel. Items 7, 8, and 12 on that application completeness checklist. Obviously, you've got to have a program manager. You've got to have a quality systems officer. I've highlighted that in red. And I've highlighted that because it's very important. Your quality systems officer, just like a lab has to have a quality systems officer. In fact, you know, there are a lot of parallels here with what a lab has to do. You've got to have a quality system, so you've got to have a quality systems officer. That doesn't mean that person only does that job. The person can have other responsibilities within your program or in your organization, but they have to be responsible for quality systems. And in fact, when you have your on-site evaluation, that person will be interviewed. Thirdly, you've got to have trained assessors. And again, this is something I'll be stressing later, but your assessor files have got to have the qualifications, internal and external training, of those assessors. During the evaluations we've just done, we had a question about what is the requirement for training. The standard as written, this is in Chapter 3 of the NELAC standard, is a little bit vague because it doesn't actually give any timelines for when this training has to be obtained. And the NELAC board issued a policy just recently that these basic and technical training requirements must be met within 1 year of the assessor starting in your program. That doesn't mean you can send out the assessor without adequate training, adequate in-house training, but in fact the basic and technical training requirements, there's a basic NELAC course that has to be taken, there are technical courses that need to be taken, you've got a year to do that. So that's something you might want to note because that's not in the standard. Okay, slide 36. So now how do you assure all those requirements are in place? How can you be sure before you submit your application, when you submit your application, that you've got everything? If you go to the NELAC standard, it's not that helpful because the 2003 NELAC standard is written in such a way that there are requirements for labs, PT providers, PT provider accreditors, as well as accreditation bodies, all kind of mixed up. And although Chapter 6 mostly addresses accreditation body requirements, you'll see accreditation body requirements through Chapters 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And there's only one other chapter, and that's Chapter 1, which we've actually we've pulled out now anyway. So really, it's a pretty complex business if you're going to rely just on the NELAC standard. However, throughout those chapters, there are 326 requirements. Wow, a lot. But they're conveniently, I'm not trying to be glib using that word conveniently, because it is convenient, because that checklist to determine accreditation body compliance pulls all of those together. So it's a real big help. And if you can fill out that checklist, and as Dan said, whenever there's a yes, put down where that item can be found in the documentation you submit. If you can fill all of that out and submit all of that documentation, then you've nailed it, certainly as far as the technical review will be concerned. Slide 37. This is a slide you might want to hang on to, folks, because what I've done here, I've taken those 326 items and I've brought them into groups. And I think you'll see as we're going through it that, in fact, it simplifies it a lot if you look at these in groups. And I have to say there's some repetition as well among those 326 items. That's the way, remember the standard was written by a committee? You know what they say about what committees write. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to go through each of these, A, B, C, D, and E. I'm going to talk about the accreditation body management system, and I'll be referring now to the checklist to determine accreditation body compliance. And you can see what all those item numbers are in that checklist. I'll then be talking about accrediting labs, the application, B, the on-site assessment, C, granting accreditation, D, and tracking proficiency testing, E. Those are all the functions that you're going to be performing as an accreditation body. The biggest one, and the one that might need the most work, as far as getting the documentation together, is the first one. That's the accreditation body management system. So let's go on to slide 38. And let's deal item by item with what you need here. First of all is your documentation. You need the authority to grant accreditation. Items 226 to 228. I'm going to try and slow down a little bit so you can actually get to these items if you wish. Items 226 to 228. Really, what it says in those is probably what's going to be in your statute that you'll submit. You've got to be a government organisation, and that government organization has to designate some program within its organization to be responsible. So that's probably in your statute, it's certainly in mine. But you've got to submit that authority. 254 and 268 also refer to that. Yeah, it says 254, you've got to maintain some record to show, to providing information setting forth your authority. So that could be just your statute and regulations, or you may want to go further. In fact, in New York, we do go further. Okay, I'm telling you the how now, and I'm not supposed to do that, but we do go further by issuing a certification manual to our labs, which kind of fills in more detail and tells them what they need to do. It's got to have your lab accreditation process, your requirements for granting, denying, suspending, and revoking accreditation. Item 258 states that. You have to have those requirements. There'll be more on that later. Second bullet, the lab rights and duties. You have to have documentation that tells the labs what their rights and duties are and what their requirements are. Next bullet, the list of assessors and technical support personnel and assessor training process. The list of assessors, item 257. Slow me down, anybody, if you're having trouble kind of following this on that checklist. You have to have a list of the names of the assessors and their responsibility, education, and experience. That's besides, of course, having individual files showing their training and such like. You have to have an assessor training program, 256. This is a really important one. This is something that the evaluation team is going to focus on in quite a big way. How well do you train your assessors? Do you have an SOP that describes an assessor training program? And most importantly, do you follow that SOP? And is that SOP conformant with the NELAC standard? It also mentions fees, 260. You have to tell your labs how much they've got to pay. Okay. Annual document review is item 263. You have to do an annual review of documents. Make sure that everything's up to date. I just want to note that item 269 on the checklist, if you want to find that one, it says the accreditation body has the same arrangement to cover liabilities and workmen's comp claims, etc., etc., etc. That's something that we decided in NELAP we would accept as done. It seems to be, it's pretty obvious, I think, it's a no-brainer that a government organisation will have those arrangements, whether it has workmen's comp or whether it, you have to, okay. So we're not going to worry about that one. Slide 39. Under the AB management system, the second one is the resources, item 270. You have to demonstrate you've got the resources needed to do the job in a timely manner. And we accept that in these days of austerity budgets and fiscal constraints, that can be a tough one. I've just had to cut 10%, for instance, from my program, and I think that's happening in many states. But you do have to convince the team that you have the resources to do things in a timely manner. Having said that, during the last review, many states were getting a bit behind with on-site assessments of laboratories. And what do? You cite them and they say, yeah, we'll try and fix it, but we'll do our best. It's a matter of resources. So you have to accept that. Slide 40. Number 3, assessor requirements. The assessor qualifications are from the standards, item 46 on this big checklist. Experienced professional with a bachelor's degree, etc., etc. So it has to be documented somewhere that those are your qualification requirements. Professional standards, that's items 115 to 126. And if you just glance through those, then within your government, I pretty much guarantee that you have an ethics policy, and I pretty much guarantee that your ethics policy will touch, more than touch, on every one of these. So all you have to do is cite that and maybe produce a copy of that to show that that's in place, the professional standards for your assessors. Of course, if you have third-party assessors, if you have contractors, then we have to look a little bit more closely at that. In other words, if they're not government employees. Internal and external training, items 47 to 51. Okay, you have to have an SOP that describes your internal training program. And there are lots and lots of different ways you can do this. The standard gives you a lot of leeway for you to decide what you need to do to train your assessors to make them competent to go out there and do the job. That's your internal training, but external training, they have to do the basic assessor training course. As I said earlier, we're giving you a year to get that done because, frankly, you know, you hire a new assessor, and I've just hired somebody, and there isn't a training course being offered right now, and it may be that the internal training for that person will be complete before the basic course has been offered, and in which case, if we're satisfied that that person is now qualified and competent, then we'll send her out, pending her completion of the basic assessor training course. The same thing with external training. There are technical courses. The NELAP board agreed that the EPA drinking water courses in Cincinnati, the certification officer courses for chemistry and micro, would qualify as technical training. I just sent two people on the one that was conducted just a few weeks ago, and we got the announcement that the next one's going to be a year and a half. These things used to be offered once a year, now it's going to be a year and a half. And again, that can place you in a very difficult position if you're relying on those courses to get your technical training. I wish that EPA would be able to offer these, say, every 6 months, so that we can, in fact, get our people out there as soon as possible, because they are very good courses. The third bullet on slide 40, you've got to have documentation that training assures the familiarity with the regulations. That's item 52, I think, on the checklist. So that's obviously your internal training, the accreditation requirements, assessment methods, lab technologies, test methods, etc. Bullet number 4, evaluation of assessor performance. That's item 279. What that says is the AB has a system in place to evaluate assessor performance that's consistent with the Organizational Employee Evaluation Program and demonstrates compliance with the NELAC Standards Chapter 3 on-site assessment. So you've got to have some way that you monitor your assessors, such as going out and shadowing them on-site, such as review of their deficiency reports and that sort of thing, which you have to do anyway, and that has to be documented, what that procedure is. Slide 41. Number 4 under the management system, internal audits. Items 287 and 308 describe these requirements. You have to have a documented procedure to conduct internal audits. In other words, besides doing the internal audits, you have to have a documented procedure. You have to have an SOP for doing the internal audits. And I'd really like to draw your attention to kind of the sentence in the middle of item 287. One element of the annual internal audit shall be to review the effectiveness of the quality systems required. Has to review your quality system. So it has to be a pretty comprehensive internal audit. And I'm emphasizing that because that was perceived as a weakness in some areas in some of the recent evaluations that we did. Slide 42, item 5, proficiency testing. Item 290, which says that you've got to have your labs participate in proficiency testing program meeting the requirements of the NELAC standards. You have to have documentation that shows that you require your labs to meet those requirements. And let me say that in terms of all of this documentation, for much of it, it's permissible to reproduce verbatim the wording from the NELAC standards, which is in fact the wording from these items. It's the copyright allows you to do it. In fact, this isn't copyrighted, it's an EPA document, it's in the public domain, so you can reproduce any of this wording. So for many of these items, an easy way is just to reproduce, as long as it's directly applicable as written, is just to reproduce the wording from the standard, and then you're safe that you've met that requirement. Slide 43, still under the AB management system records. You have to have records on your assessors, 271 to 285 covers those. Let's see. This is really going to be in the assessor files, probably. 271 to 285 give a whole list of name, address, education, work experience, etc., etc. All the stuff that's going to be in the assessor's CV, for instance. And that has to include all of the training of assessors. You know, certificates that they might have obtained from training courses, etc. Documentation to show that training was in fact completed. Second bullet, comprehensive and complete records for each lab. I cannot stress this strongly enough. Item 293 says the accreditation body has arrangements to establish and maintain records for each accredited laboratory with respect to all aspects of the laboratory's accreditation process. When the team comes to visit you, they're going to select a handful of your labs. They probably won't tell you in advance which labs they're going to look at, and they're going to pull those records. And those records need to be complete. And records have to be retained for 10 years. That's the third bullet. If you look at item 294, that's what it says. Records. NELAP accreditation records for a minimum of 10 years. Now, I take that to mean everything. If it's NELAP accreditation records, everything to do with the NELAP accreditation. But then if you go to item 139, you see what I perceive, and anybody can interrupt and tell me I'm wrong here, I perceive as a contradiction here, because item 139 says, for on-site assessment reports, checklists, and lab responses, retain them for 5 years. Well, to me, those are NELAP records. So I would say you've got to retain everything. In spite of what it says in 139, I'd say you've got to retain everything for 10 years.
Ken?
Yes?
This is Jean. I have a question that was submitted online from Minnesota. Lynn from Minnesota is actually asking that. She says, our current regs require one PT per year, so I am unable to say yes to several of the PT questions on the checklist. I placed comments, however, I'm wondering how these types of issues are addressed in the review and evaluation. Can you clarify the process for new ABs with enabling legislation but no regulatory change?
Yeah. I'm assuming that the intent is to require two PTs a year, because if it isn't, then sadly you can't be admitted as an accreditation body. If the intent is two PTs a year, and if you're going to implement that, and you can satisfy us that you're going to implement it, then we understand that regulatory changes can take time, and we understand that you may have to implement this before you've actually got the regulatory authority to do so. This happens all the time. But if you can't, you know, if you can't do that, then it is unfortunately going to have to delay your application until you do have the authority, until you're able to do it. You have to be able to comply with the NELAC PT requirement. I hope that answers the question.
Ken, this is Susan Wyatt. I actually submitted that question.
Oh, okay, Susan.
For Lynn's login. So when I'm filling out the, I have filled out the checklist, and so I have several comments, and it's, you know, a to-do list for us because we're missing a couple of SOPs. But Dan's comment previously was, you know, all of the no's are, of course, deficiencies, and you should have only a few NAs, but I was filling out the checklist as our current status at the time of our application.
Yeah.
Could I instead be filling it out as, yes, this is intended, and then placing a comment saying you won't find the documentation, but yes, this is what we intend to do if approved and regulatory changes go into place?
I would, you know, these are issues that we haven't faced yet, so this kind of, but yeah, you're right. It's something maybe I haven't thought about, and Dan can maybe jump in if he wants to here. But I would say what you've just said, yes, I would say do that. So that at least the team's not going to sort of get upset with you and say, she doesn't want to do this and it's not acceptable. At least the team would then understand what your intent is. And they would make their recommendation based on that. Obviously, if half of your checklist said, no, we don't have the authority to do this and we can't do it yet, then there might be problems. But if there are just a few items, then I think the team's going to consider that.
Hey, Ken, this is Steve.
Yes,
Steve. I would just add that if you had proposed legislation or regulations in the works, you could submit a copy of those as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Not allowed.
Not allowed?
It's not public information.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, once it goes out for public comment, you probably can't you, Susan?
Well, if it's a regulation, yes.
Yeah.
If it's a legislative initiative, no.
So,
legislative initiatives are not public.
They are once they've become a bill, though, right?
That's true, yes. So if the timing is, you know...
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're having to do all this by law, not by rule?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, well, anyway, I'll shut up. I just wanted to say,
okay,
if you had something like that, that would certainly go a long way.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Let me just add, though, Susan, and if this helps, and you could even maybe get something in writing from NELAP to this effect, everything that you do submit is treated with absolute confidence by the assessment team. In other words, it's not released.
I was informed that I can't even tell another state agency.
Wow.
I doubt that I could tell another.
Yeah.
It'd be outside the state, but
yeah,
it might be a moot point anyway. I mean, it's just I could see it being problematic later if the timing of any future evaluations, hopefully, if we were an accrediting body and we had to go through an evaluation, if we were going through a legislative initiative at that time, I would not be able to divulge that.
Okay. But you know, I think if you can state, maybe even paraphrase what he's going to say in your regs or whatever you can do, that,
right,
you know, this is being worked on, this is what we will have in place, and you know, by the time we become an AB,
okay,
then I believe that's going to satisfy the team.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to slide 44. AB management system, denial, suspension, and revocation. Number 7. Items 180 through 217. Have all the wording that you probably want to put verbatim in your regulations if you can. This is very, very important, because you've got to have the authority to deny, suspend, and revoke laboratories in conformance with this standard. And it's all there. We do understand that in practice there may be problems. And certainly there are some states, and one of them just spoke up actually, who I know have problems, for instance, with suspension because of due process requirements. You threaten a laboratory with suspension, or you give it notice of suspension, then it has a right to a hearing. And guess what? By the time the hearing comes up, the lab can continue working until the hearing, and guess what? By the time the hearing comes up, it's fixed whatever was the cause for suspension, so it all goes away. And so we do recognize that it's one thing to have in your regulation that you'll be suspending laboratories. I'm lucky in New York. I can actually do this. The only due process I have to give them is 10 days notice, and then I do it, for suspension anyway. But it is recognized that although you have this in regulation, in practice it may be difficult or even impossible for you to do this. And there is in fact allowances for this within the NELAP process, that if there's some state requirement, some government requirement that makes it you're unable to implement the standard as written, then that has to be accepted. So don't worry about that. Well, you probably should, because it takes away a very powerful tool if you can't suspend laboratories, but we do understand that it may not be possible for you. Okay. Number 8 under the management system, slide 45, contracting. 297 to 302, in other words, if any of you do have third-party assessors, and I know a few states do, then the requirements for contractors are there in 297 to 302. Number 9 on slide 46. This is an interesting one. Notifying changes to NELAP. As an accreditation body, and this is item 315 to 320, if you look at those, quite a lot of stuff that you'll have to notify NELAP about. Changes in authority, obviously. Changes in regulations, yeah, we would think so. But guidance documents, SOPs, wow. And I've got to admit that I have been lax in doing this, and I think probably every AB has, I don't know. But that is a requirement in the standard, and I know Dan is eagerly waiting to receive notification of all those changes as they happen and to acknowledge that he's received them. Right, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. I've got nothing else to do with my email.
That's right. And then we can hear Tarzan, can't we, when it goes off? Okay. Okay, that gets through the management system. A lot of stuff there, an awful lot of documentation, but hopefully that does simplify it somewhat when you kind of bring it into groups here. And really, you know, we're not asking any more of accreditation bodies than we're asking of laboratories in terms of documentation. There's some real parallels here. You have to have a quality system, you have to have SOPs, you have to have guidance documents, just like a laboratory does. Okay, now, going on to the second item on that slide, which was 37. Accrediting labs, the lab application. And this is slide 47 now. The application package. Items 140 to 142 in the checklist just talk about mobile labs. If you have mobile labs, it says you have to decide how you're going to accredit those. And then 150 to 177 says what you have to have on your application form. And there's a whole list. So you need to design your application form so that all of that is there. And if you look at item 177, there's a certification that the laboratory owner or the laboratory owner's representative has to sign. You've got to have that exact wording on your application form. The team will be looking at that. The team's going to look at that form, and they're going to check off every one of these items to make sure that your lab application form has got all of these in place. The second one, technical directors, 27 to 30 on the list, says the lab's got to have a technical director, a full-time member of staff, etc., etc. And must meet the qualifications found in the NELAC standard. Item 157, I'm not sure what that says. Let's see, that's... oh, no, that just says you have to have the name and the phone number of the technical director, etc., etc. You've got to verify that. And I'm saying that because I'm speaking from experience here. We require transcripts. And if it's from a foreign university, we require an official translation of that transcript. And not just a translation, but, you know, you've got those bodies who will certify that it's equivalent to a a US institution. My experience tells me that people will do this deliberately and probably inadvertently. They'll submit transcripts and they'll use all sorts of ploys to try and convince you that some of the courses they're listed are actually chemistry and that they'll contribute to those 24 credits. And you have to be very careful. So you have to verify those qualifications. You have to have some procedure in place, written procedure of how you will verify those qualifications. You might do it by having them submit transcripts, you might do it on site when you visit the lab, it doesn't matter. But that's got to be done. Slide 48. Item number 3, the laboratory quality manual. 171 says the lab has to submit its quality manual. Well, maybe. That depends. For an initial accreditation, then yes, you want that quality manual up front before you'll even visit that laboratory. But if you're giving secondary accreditation, then you can look at the quality manual if you want, but if you do, you can't do anything about it because you have to rely on the primary accreditation. So you may not be asking for a quality manual for secondary accreditation. We don't. Offer renewal. If we're renewing a laboratory and we already have that laboratory's quality manual on file, and this is the individual preference of our assessors. Some of them ask for another quality manual, others wait till they get on site and actually look then for any changes. So you may or may not want a quality manual. So don't interpret that exactly as written, that they must submit a quality manual. Slide 49, number 4, recognition. This is a real, real important one. Items to 240 to 246. You have to grant recognition to a laboratory that's accredited in a NELAP state. And what this means is, if you're in Minnesota and there's a California lab that applies to you for accreditation in your state, but it already has NELAP accreditation in California, you have to grant secondary accreditation for those fields of accreditation for which it's accredited in California. No ifs, ands, or buts, you've got to do it. You have to accept what California did. You can ask the laboratory for more information. You can ask for anything you want in your application form. For instance, we still ask for credentials so we have them on file, but if we find that the credentials, if we find that on receiving those credentials, that technical director doesn't meet the requirements, we can't just deny them. We would have to go back to California and say, hey folks, you messed up here. You shouldn't have let this person in, and we would have to sort it out with California. Okay? So that's very, very important. It's all about trust. And unless you're prepared to do that, you can't be a NELAP AB. And also in this checklist, there's some mention of reciprocity here. That's an old word that should have been taken out. We used to call it reciprocity in the beginning. It's recognition, and I'm just saying that because I want everybody to understand what recognition means. Reciprocity is what you get with a driver's license. I live in New York. If I want to drive in New Jersey, I can drive in New Jersey on my New York license. It works there. That's reciprocity. If it was recognition, I would have to go to the state of New Jersey, apply for a driver's license, but show them my New York license, and they would then grant me a New Jersey license after I paid my fee because I have a New York license, and they'd accept I don't have to take another driving test in New Jersey. That's recognition. So that's the difference, and it's recognition that we have in NELAB. Okay, that covers the application. Number C on that earlier slide, accrediting labs, the on-site assessment. And this brings us to slide number 50. Number one is timelines. These are kind of self-explanatory if you just look at them. Item 50, 59 in that checklist. The checklist to determine accreditation body compliance. Tells you have to do a comprehensive on-site assessment prior to granting accreditation, except as allowed by interim accreditation. We'll come to that in a few minutes. And it talks about the frequency and the timelines. Items 31 and 32 talk about the timelines for getting a deficiency report out to the laboratories and for reviewing that laboratory's corrective action report. Slide 51. The structure of the assessment. When I looked at this again, you might want to change where I've said the accreditation checklist 79 to 91 and 94. I'm not sure why I missed 92 and 93 out. So it's really 79 to 94. They all cover the structure of the assessment. You have to have documentation. And that probably goes in your on-site assessment SOP. And then number three on slide 52, conducting the assessment. These items, 26, 39, just a minute. Or 26 is just what happens when the lab refuses to let you in. And this has happened to us. And we had to take the necessary action. 39, the fact that when you conduct the assessment, you have to assure the laboratory meets all the requirements of NELAC Chapter 5, which is the quality system standard. Items 60 to 78 talks about follow-up assessments and it goes on to tell you exactly what you must be looking for, well, not exactly, but what you must be looking for in an on-site assessment. You need an SOP. You need a detailed SOP for this. The team's going to want to see that SOP, and they're going to want to see that it's followed and that the assessors are familiar with that SOP. The NELAC assessments are both a systems audit and a technical audit. They're both there. Okay, so there's besides looking at all the documentation, you have to be looking at the methods, you have to interview the analysts, you have to look at the instrumentation, etc., etc. Item 60 and 61 describe follow-up assessments. You have to have the ways and means to do follow-up assessments if you have to. If a laboratory was so bad the first time that you need to go back. Slide 53 talks about the deficiency report. 97 says gives the timelines for which you have to by which you have to put out that report. It talks about corrective actions. 128 to 136. That says what the assessment report has to contain. It has to be in a narrative format. A narrative format doesn't necessarily mean that you have to report observations if you don't want. In other words, you know, we liked this, we didn't like that, but it's not a deficiency. You can restrict it just to deficiencies, and we do that, but it has to be in a narrative format in that it's got to tell the laboratory what was wrong. And let me stress, you can tell the laboratory, you can add what must be fixed, but you can't tell the laboratory how to fix it. That would be acting as a consultant, and in fact ISO 17011 does not allow an accreditor to act as a consultant. So you can tell them what they've got to fix, you can't say this is how you would do it. Okay, go to slide 54. Number 5 is the Lab's Corrective Action Report, item 143, 145, and 148. Pretty straightforward, I think, on what has to be done there with the Corrective Action Report, the timelines and what the laboratory has to do. It doesn't have to necessarily correct all its deficiencies, it has to give you a satisfactory response. So if it says, hey, I can't fix this for another 3 months, and in your opinion, that's not enough to have a deleterious effect on the laboratory's quality system, then you can let that go, as long as you do get evidence that it's been corrected. Okay, now we go on to what was D on slide 37, accrediting labs granting accreditation. And this is now slide 55. Interim accreditation 219 to 220. This is an interesting one in that what this says is if the laboratory has completed all the requirements, in other words, if it's got a satisfactory application in, if the technical director or directors have met the qualification and experience requirements, if it's completed its proficiency testing, but if you, as an AB, haven't been able to get out in time to do an on-site assessment, you can give the lab interim accreditation pending that on-site assessment. Now, the intent of this when it was written, and I know because I helped to write this part way back with the state EPA focus group that preceded NELAC, and I in fact it may have been me who put it in because we did that in New York at the time. The intent was that was for new labs, and the reason we put it in, we wanted it in, is because we have a business law in New York that says if anybody applies for a permit, you've only got so long to give it to them, otherwise you're restricting their business. And so we had to have that ability to grant interim accreditation if we didn't have the resources to do the on-site on time. But now we find that what some states are doing, and this is okay, but what some states are doing, they're reading the standard exactly as it's written, and it says, and they're saying, well, this is a lab that's been accredited by us for some time, but on this occasion, because our resources didn't allow us to get there within 2 years, or in fact 2 years plus or minus 6 months, therefore, we're granting interim accreditation to that laboratory that, in fact, was fully accredited until we can get there. The NELAC board has ruled that that's okay. Well, I don't know how okay it is, but you can do it. It's kind of a way of getting around not having the resources to go and assess a laboratory when it's due. So I would say it's somewhat questionable, but it can be done, okay? So it can be used for initial applications or for labs that have not been subject to an on-site assessment within 2.5 years. And that interim accreditation can only go for a maximum of 3 years since the last on-site assessment. The NELAC board also decided on that as a policy. Okay. Slide 56. We're getting towards the end now. Certificates of accreditation, and I think we've only got 15 minutes left, so I better speed up a little bit. Certificates of accreditation 221 to 225. That just tells you what the certificate's got to have. Let me stress that the team is going to look at a certificate and they're going to want to make sure that everything that's required by that standard in those items is there in detail. And if it's not, you're going to get cited on it. Slide 57, Advertising and the use of NELAP accreditation, items 321 to 326, those are the last few items on the checklist, just telling you what you need to do to assure that laboratories don't misrepresent themselves and how they use the logo, etc. Slide 58. This is the last item on accrediting labs. This is tracking proficiency testing. The laboratory requirements are in items 1 to 24 on the checklist. You might say, well, those are lab requirements. Why do I need them? Well, you have to have it documented somewhere for the laboratories. In other words, you have to make sure that the laboratories have received this requirement, have been told about it. In other words, they have to participate in a proficiency testing program. They have to pass 2 out of 3, etc., etc. Your responsibilities are also in items 2, 25, and 45. You've got to make sure the lab participates, and you have to track. This is a very important function. You have to be able to show that team that you have a system for tracking proficiency testing performance as it comes in from the PT providers, the approved PT providers, that you have a way of checking that against the lab's accreditation and assuring that the lab remains compliant, because if it doesn't, you've got to suspend for any analytes that have been failed consistently, like 2 out of 3. So you must have that tracking system in place. You must have documentation to show you've got that tracking system in place.
Ken, we had a question come in online.
Yep.
And the question is also coming out of Minnesota, and they ask, as a new AB, will we grant interim NELAP accreditation to the current labs accredited in our program until we are able to conduct the first NELAP-based on-site assessment, in other words, grandfathering?
I don't know if I'd use the word grandfathering there, but yeah, that's certainly what you can do, and that, provided you can get to those laboratories within... okay. I think, yeah, you can grant interim accreditation for up to a year, I believe. I think that's what the standard says for a new laboratory. For 1 year. But then after that, you've got to be able to get that on-site assessment done.
Yeah, I think we said they had to have the on-site assessment done before the end of the year, because it has to come off of interim accreditation. It means process has to be done.
But isn't that within 12 months of them being granted interim accreditation?
Yes,
okay, yeah. Hopefully that answers that question. Okay, let's go to slide 59. To summarize, number one.
Sorry, Ken?
Yeah.
Sorry, this is Susan.
Yes, Susan.
We're not talking about the evaluation and the shadowing for the on-site, but if we have enabling legislation and we are approved as an accrediting body, so that we don't have a lag in accreditation with the current labs in our program, can we grant them interim accreditation until their normal accreditation cycle comes up to I guess give them a full NELAP assessment?
Well, yeah, but only provided you can do that within a year. If your accreditation cycle is 1 year, then you can do it.
Well, no. Our accreditation cycle is currently 2.5, so...
Well, I think then, Susan, you would have to continue them under your old program. I mean, is there a problem in doing that, in having a two-tier program temporarily?
Right, we wouldn't be able to have a dual program temporarily. I'm kind of trying to figure out how we would address that.
Well, you know...
Without contractor. I mean, I know that one option is hiring contractors, but I don't know that that option would be available to us. I'm wondering what, other applicants might be doing, because they might be in the same boat as us.
I think that might be an issue that we can talk at the board, Ken.
Yeah, I think it is Dan. Susan, could you send a reminder to Dan or to me or both?
Okay.
So that we can bring it up at the board level, because that's a real good point.
Okay. Thanks.
And I'm sure there are going to be other, you know, this is kind of new to us, because most of us actually came in, you know, all at once, and there's just been a couple who came in later, two or three came in later, and we haven't had to face a lot of these issues. You know, there may be more of these issues that will come up, and obviously we're going to have to introduce some flexibility, I think, that may not be there right now.
Okay.
If that makes you feel any better.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, slide 59. You've got to have a quality manual, policies and procedures addressing the following. And I've just given a list, and that list, I pretty much reproduced that from what we do. Okay, I won't say the how. But document control and organizational structure, records control, contracting, complaints, lab application review. That's something I may not have mentioned, but this is a function of your quality systems person or your quality systems officer, that all applications are going to be reviewed properly, and also further down it says on-site assessment deficiency review, that when an assessment report is prepared, that somebody looks at the checklist and looks at the report that was prepared and makes sure everything's in line and that all your assessors are doing what they ought to do. So you need SOPs for that. Right at the bottom, and more. If you do it, document it. It's as simple as that. Not simple, but it's as straightforward as that. Slide 60. I said this before, you must have a fully documented file on each accredited laboratory. It can be electronic, it can be hard copy, it can be a mixture. Right now we have a mixture in New York because we're trying to go paperless, but it's taking us a long time. But that's okay, as long as you have the records there, in one file or more files, as long as they can all be pulled together. It's pretty obvious, I think, looking down that list on what has to be there. But essentially, any correspondence between you and the laboratory should be in that file, so that anybody can pick up that file and they can look chronologically on what's happened with that laboratory. And certainly application forms have got to be there, some documentation that the qualifications of the technical director have been verified, or even the transcripts if you want to put them in the file, PT data, on-site assessment checklists, corrective action reports, etc., etc., etc. Slide 61. As Dan said earlier, you're going to have a technical review. That technical review is going to be, tell me, do you have all the essential documentation in place? And that's what this was about, really. It's about filling out this checklist to determine accreditation body compliance, and you're telling the assessment team, yep, I have all of that in place, which is fine. They will complete the technical review and they'll sign off on it, but then if you look at slide 62, show me. And that's when the on-site evaluation comes up. Are you doing in practice what your documentation says you must do? And again, we do recognize that a lot of functions won't be implemented until you start accrediting labs. So this is something we've got to work through, and just to how much we can look at when you're looking at an accreditation body that's not even started doing any accreditation yet. There might be just a lot of promises there that we've got to look at. Well, we understand that. And just look at the note on the bottom of slide 62 in italics. You're going to be held to follow your SOPs even if they exceed the NEOAC requirements. And I'll readily admit, we just got stung on that one because we had an overzealous quality systems person here who decided that part of our assessor training ought to be for us to shadow an assessor... have the assessor shadow a qualified assessor on 8 assessments, and the standard only says 4. And guess what? We'd only been doing 4, and we got dinged on it, because even though we were meeting the requirements of the standard, we weren't meeting the requirements of our SOP. So we had to change our SOP. So just be warned about that. If you want to really go beyond and be really careful, extra careful about what you're doing, then make sure that you are following that SOP, even if it exceeds the standard. Slide 63, next steps. I describe what you've got to do. As I said earlier, we're going to be offering mentoring. At the meeting in Miami, for those of you who can attend, there will be a mentoring session, and there will be ongoing mentoring. Now, I felt kind of bad when I looked and I saw that, you may have seen it, I don't know, both Dan and I had to submit our credentials, a little bio sketch, and we were supposed to send photographs, and I noticed that I saw Dan's smiling face there, but I didn't send a photograph. So in amends, if you look at the last slide, that's me, slide 64. And that's me telling you that we want you, okay? We want you as an AB. Dan said this earlier, we're not a closed shop. We would love to have 50 ABs, okay? We'd like to have every state. Beyond that, every territory and possession. We want as many as we can. Between us, we've got about 70 or 80 years of experience. We've gone through this application process four times, and we learned the hard way. We made mistakes. We had successes, and we learned from our mistakes. You don't have to learn from those mistakes, because we've done it, and this is why I'm stressing, you know, allow us to mentor you. Come to our mentoring sessions, and I'm speaking now for the other ABs. If you want to contact any of us to give you any help, any advice in how we did it, then that's what we're here for, because we want to make it as easy as possible for all of you to become NELAP accreditation bodies. And having said that, with I think about 3 minutes spare, I guess I'm done. So if there are any more questions, I can try and answer them.
Go ahead. Feel free to take your phone lines off mute. You've done so. I don't see any additional questions submitted online, but if you do have a question, feel free, now is the time to type it up or speak up.
This is Steve Arms. I just wanted to add to what Ken said there at the end that I'm sure the others would be willing to do so as well. You don't have to do any of this in a vacuum. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. We've all got copies of the applications we've submitted in the past. You know, there are things that have worked, SOPs, any of those sorts of things. I'm pretty sure we all have them electronically, and we'd be willing to share with you folks that are out there, you know, trying to write these things. You don't have to reinvent them. So, you know, just contact me or contact probably any of the rest. I'm sure they'd be willing to share all those kinds of documents.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Thank you.
I have a question. Hello?
Go ahead.
I have a question. This is Barbara Escobar from the state of Arizona. We were requesting a while back, not from this group, from another group, a possibility of PT spreadsheet that somebody's already worked on that would help to monitor the PT. And I don't know if there's anybody that's on the call now that is willing to share something, or if we could contact someone regarding how they would handle, you know, the evaluation of the PTs. If they think that their spreadsheet or their software works, or if they could, you know, point us to the right supplier, if there is a software that's already available.
Well, Barbara, you have to let your labs get PT samples from any of the approved providers. But in terms of tracking, yeah, I mean, everybody may have a different way of doing it, and certainly that's something that we can talk about in the mentoring sessions. For instance, I evaluated the California program, and if you know Fred Chosky, he's mm-hmm. he's their PT guy, and he does an outstanding job, and he does all of this manually. He actually looks at all the stuff coming in, and he I think he has an Excel spreadsheet where he monitors all of this, and he coordinates it with the lab records, and he does a real good job. So that's one possibility. You might want to contact him. It's a bit different for us in New York, because we have our own PT program and it all goes in our database, so it's easier for us. But yeah, I mean, that's something that can certainly be done in the mentoring sessions.
Okay, thanks.
And Ken and Dan, this is Susan. First of all, thanks for obviously all of the
work you guys put into the slides and the information. It's very helpful. And if any of the accrediting bodies on the line have SOPs and their display manuals they're willing to share, if they can email those to me, I'd like to look at more than one example and see which one, I guess, fits our current process. So that would be great.
Oh, we can absolutely inundate you with information.
I'll zip all of our send them to you, Susan.
Any other last comments or questions? Well, if there aren't any additional comments or questions, as both Ken and Dan pointed out earlier, their contact information is available on the seminar homepage. You can feel free to email them or call them at any point in time with additional questions. If there are some other materials that Dan or Ken you'd like or Carol would like to see posted, we can certainly get that up on the seminar homepage as well. So if there are some of these sample spreadsheets you think would be a good resource, we can certainly put that up. I'd like to thank everyone for participating today and direct you to the very final slide, slide number 65, which is our thank you slide and points to two additional links. And before I talk about them, we just had one comment come in from Texas where Steve says that the Texas SOPs are available online at www.tceq.state.tx.us/goto/lab. And Steve, thanks for providing that URL. In fact, I think we'll include that as one of the additional resources after today. So again, the final two links that are shown on slide number 65, the first one will bring you to the links to additional resources, which have a number of the documents that were discussed during today's information session, as well as a copy of the PowerPoint presentations that we went through today, and a few other helpful links, and we will continue to add to those resources as you share them with us. The second link on slide 65 is our feedback form. It just takes a moment or two. We do greatly appreciate any sort of comments or information you can let us know as far as how the event was actually delivered, what you thought of the content, the instructors, as well as the methodology of how you participated, and if you have future suggestions for improvement, because we do read all of those and try to use that to help gauge our future deliveries. Thanks again to our two instructors and to Carol for setting this thing up, and as well all of the states who called in and joined us today. The event, again, will be recorded and will be archived. So the same URL you used to register, you'll be able to come back to that URL in about 2 weeks and replay the same training. So feel free to share that with colleagues and coworkers that you think will benefit from the session.
Question.
Sure.
Hello?
Yeah,
could you repeat the Texas address one more time, please?
Absolutely. That Texas address was www.tceq, T as in Tom, C as in Charlie, E as in Ernie, Q as in Qbert. .state.tx for Texas, .us/goto/lab. And again, we will include that URL in the additional resources. So you'll be able to come back to that. You're very welcome. So there's no other questions or comments. Again, my thanks to the instructors and to Carol for setting this up, as well as all of you for attending. I hope everybody has a great afternoon, and that we'll see you again sometime soon at another Clue and Internet seminar. This will conclude today's event. Thank you.